Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas here. It's the Grapevine at SaverLife.com. And this week, the forecast has dropped for Wednesday night, and it's probably going to worry the vineyards in the Finger Lakes and around New York State, because right now Rochester's forecast is 28 degrees on Wednesday night. And of course, that can drop. It was forecasted for 30 degrees just yesterday. So, and one of the reasons they're probably more concerned than ever is that France just had some devastating freezes hit most of their wine regions. So it really, they've had cold snaps and frosts and freezes before, but generally they affect a region of France and not like most of them. It really is remarkable, and you can see videos and get more details online of how they tried to limit the damage, but the temperatures just got too cold. And you can put fires out in the vineyard, as I mentioned yesterday, and smoke pots, and all of those things help to move air. They don't actually warm the vineyards, but they help to move the air and keep the cold air from settling. But I think it got down to something like 22 degrees in many of these areas of France, and that is just a really, really hard freeze. So we're not expected to get that, but again, forecasts can change, and I think the French vines may have been a little ahead of where our vines are at this point. They had some 80 degree weather preceded the freeze, the hard freeze. And that really pushed the buds a lot. So the cool weather we're having now is good here in our area leading up to Wednesday night. But it's still, the buds are ahead of where I'd like them to be. And if some may have opened, some close to opening, and that makes them more vulnerable to these kinds of freezes. So in France, it's the Rhone Valley, Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, Provence, the Loire Valley, all of these areas. It's like 80% of the vineyards in, according to a CNN article, 80% of the vineyards in France's primary wine growing areas. Loss estimates are in the 25 to 50%. In some regions, and in some it'll be far more than that. In Cornas in particular, they said it was the worst frost in more than 50 years. So, as I said yesterday, it really is just a sign of how difficult it is to work with Mother Nature. And while there's a few people out there that might say that, these freezes are a sign that global warming is not a thing, in actuality, the problem is that the temperatures have been too warm this spring, and that's what has pushed these buds too early. And then these dramatic swings of weather, which do seem to be associated with climate change, they can cause much more damage because of the warm weather we had. A fairly mild winter, we really didn't get any temperatures low enough to damage vines this winter. Sometimes we do, but it was a pretty mild winter in a relative sense. It didn't feel that mild, but it was. And all it takes is just one night. And in fact, Wednesday night, those low temperatures of, they're forecasting 28 degrees now, will probably only happen at 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Usually around sunrise are the coldest temperatures. So it's just a few hours of it, really, that can cause this much significant damage. So, as I've said before, this is one of the reasons that we have planted grapes on slopes around lakes, because the slopes keep the air moving and the lakes keep the temperature is milder than they would otherwise. None of these lakes are frozen at this point, and so the water is it's not warm water, but it is much warmer than the air temperatures when we get down to these kinds of freezing or near freezing temperatures. So I think I saw somewhere it was Gene Pierce's Glenora Gazette. Every week he reports on what's happening sort of behind the scenes, but also what the temperatures are of Keuka and Seneca Lakes. Seems like Keuka Lake is the one who really reports it every week. I think it was 47 degrees, and it had gone up. This was a week ago. It had gone up so like 4 degrees over that past week just because of the warm temperatures. So, again, that lake at 47 degrees is a tremendous buffer to, a hard frost that's, 28 to 30 degrees. But if we got down to 22 degrees, that would be really devastating. In this week's Glenora Gazette, Gene says 46 degrees, that's Keuka Lake. It dropped a degree over this past week with the cold weather. He mentions the one exception to the forecast of milder weather is Wednesday night. They're predicting a low of 30 degrees down in some of their vineyards. But it can vary a lot around the region, how close you are to the lake, and depending on which way the wind is blowing, if there's any wind. If there's wind, it helps the air moving. If there's no wind, then that's when people need those wind machines to keep the air moving. So when you're buying a bottle of wine, especially here in New York State, you're supporting local industry. You're supporting farmers and vineyard owners and managers and wineries who have to deal with this uncertainty every year. Will we have a late frost? Will we have an early frost that will stop the ripening process in the fall? This is a tricky area to grow grapes in, but the results are pretty astounding. Some big news this past week: you can now order the new Paul Hobbs Riesling. It is available on their website, which is Hillick and Hobbs, H-I-L-L-I-C-K, Hillick and Hobbs. That's Paul's mother's maiden name. And so honoring her, she and his father met at Cornell University, and Paul's daughter graduated from Cornell University just a few years ago. So Hillick and Hobbs is where you can order the wine. It's $35 per bottle for Riesling, their first Riesling that they've released to the public. They made small amounts in previous years, a year ago. This is a 2019 vintage. It's not the 2020 yet. But they made a tiny bit in 2018. Didn't release it because they didn't have enough to do that. The vines were so new that the production was very low on them. You really have to wait 3 to 4 years before you get a decent production from the vines. So first you got to clear the land and prepare the vineyards, plant them. You're sinking a ton of money into those vineyards before you get anything back. And even though you produce a vintage in whatever year it is, you probably aren't going to sell it for another year or two, depending on the grape variety. So it's a lot of capital, you're talking 5, 6, 7 years before you have any money coming in the door. It's crazy. You need you need to be able to withstand a bunch of years with no income, which is one of the reasons that wineries, new wineries in particular, will buy grapes from other vineyards and produce wine while they're waiting for their own vines to grow. Paul Hobbs considered doing that, I think, but decided he would wait for his own grapes, and that wine is now available, and it will probably sell out fairly quickly. So if you want the first vintage that he has produced and you want to see what it's like, I'm going to do a blind tasting with a number of local Rieslings just to see if I can pick out, you know, which one is his. Is it, you know, how much different is it? That'll be really fascinating, actually. James Molesworth has already evaluated it and scored it a 90 and in that same review, and that'll be published in the Wine Spectator paper magazine, you know, the regular magazine, in the very near future. It's available online for subscribers of Wine Spectator, but he scored Ford Cellars 92 points. Yet another vintage of Ford Cellars scoring above 90 or above, which pretty much every, or not even pretty much, every vintage that they've made since their first vintage of 2011 has been 90 or above in Wine Spectator. So these are winemakers, Ford Cellars, it's Louis Barol, and Paul Hobbs, who have international reputations as some of the best winemakers in the world, and they've retained those it's not really a ranking, but that elevated position over decades. This is nothing new, Paul was one of the three flying winemakers to help relaunch Malbec in Argentina. At the time that Paul and these other two flying winemakers, I think one was from Italy and one was from France, they were hired as consultants by various wineries in Argentina. And they were hired as consultants, well, Paul in particular, to make Chardonnay. They were giving up on Malbec. They were ripping out Malbec vineyards, old Malbec vineyards, to plant Chardonnay and Cabernet, Paul and his other two winemakers really ended up convincing Argentina to keep Malbec, and it is now their signature grape, which it has been and had been for a long time, but they'd given up on it as a grape that they felt could produce world-class wines. And it turns out that it was probably the way they were making it that was the problem. It was the sort of bulk production of Malbec that was the issue, rather than, you know, and vineyard maintenance and a whole bunch of other things. But it wasn't the grape variety. And now Malbec is, said, the signature grape of Argentina. So there's a really good book called The Vineyard at the End of the World, which Ian Mount, writer for, I think, for Washington Post, did quite a few years ago about the wineries of Argentina and the history of winemaking in Argentina, and the impact of these flying winemakers on what's happening today, which is billions of dollars of investment in the vineyards of Argentina. So looking for a kind of a history of Malbec in Argentina, Ian Mount's book is really good. It's probably 10 or 15 years, 12 years old, I know, something like that. But it's a book about the history of Argentina and their winemaking, and it's as relevant today as it was when he printed it. If you want details on anything like that I mentioned, feel free to email me, Michael@saverlife.com. And yesterday was a big rally down in Dresden. This is where the Greenwich power plant is located, which is looking for approval from the town of Torrey to quadruple their operations. And that is just a horrible idea. But they've got money to spend, they've got money to give away, and they are doing that in Torrey. And while the ramifications of the expansion at Greenwich will affect the entire lake and the entire region, it is the town of Torrey that is going to decide this at this point. And so there was a rally yesterday. There are some key town and town planning board meetings coming up this week, including one tomorrow, which is, I think, the town planning board. The scale of what they're doing is just amazing. There were well over 100 people at the rally yesterday afternoon, the rain stopped largely for the day. So there were a number of speakers, and then people walked over to the gates of Greenwich to really make a public protest that this company, which, you know, power plants were originally commissioned for the common good and regulated by the Public Service Commission, and, you know, faced, you know, state regulation on emissions and water, et cetera, water use. But these companies have found a loophole, and that is that, you know, they could buy a power plant and do something behind the grid, before the grid. So the power that they're using is not going out on the grid. They're using it themselves to mine Bitcoin. And so it is largely unregulated. And the galling thing really is that the head of the company says that they're using the best available technology to protect the lake, and he lives on the lake, and he loves the lake, and he grew up here, and but they're not. I mean, they're not using the best available technology because they don't have to. They have old permits that predate the Clean Water Act, and if this company really wanted to protect the lake, they would say, you know, we don't have to follow the Clean Water Act, but we choose to. And we'll make the investments so that we comply with the Clean Water Act. But they're not going to do that. Those would be expensive investments. This is a company that's making a ton of money. So I don't, you know, could they afford to do it or not? That's, you know, given the windfall in Bitcoin prices, it seems pretty likely that they could. But again, their decision is that they're going to get away with these old grandfathered permits. And there were a number of winemakers at the rally yesterday, and at least one winery owner, Vinnie Alipurdi from Billsboro Winery, was one of the speakers. So was I. My key point that I've mentioned here before was that the scale of what they're doing is beyond our imagination. And really, actually, a quote from Greenwich's website is that Greenwich's scalability is limited only by your imagination. But they have a permit to use 139 million gallons a day to cool their turbine that's powered by fracked gas. And that's almost 28,000 tanker trucks a day of water that's being taken out of Seneca Lake, warmed up to, they have a permit to warm it up to 108 degrees and then release all that water into the Cuca outlet that runs into Seneca Lake. So the scale of this is astounding. So if you want to get involved, you can donate to Seneca Lake Guardian. you can volunteer. There will be no doubt additional protests and various things that will happen over the next several months. This is not going to be solved easily, and this is the future of Seneca Lake at stake, which is the largest of the Finger Lakes. It has half the wineries of the Finger Lakes, and it is right in the crosshairs of Greenwich's expansion. And by the way, the word just came out a couple days ago that another company has bought a power plant in North Tonawanda that's planning to do the exact same thing, mine Bitcoin behind the grid. And it's all about cheap power. That's how you make money with Bitcoin, access to cheap power. So several companies have been asking around in Watkins Glen because, and I didn't realize this, Watkins Glen has a hydro agreement, and they have very cheap electric rates in Watkins Glen, kind of like Fairport, I think. There are communities like this that, and I don't know the logistics, the reasons how they managed to do this, but there are a number of communities around New York State that have hydro agreements that offer some really inexpensive electric power, and Bitcoin is looking for them. And so buying a power plant is a really good way to do this. But in Watkins Glen, they're just looking to use municipal power, which the scale of power use is the problem, and the rates for everyone will go up if they are sucking in major amounts of the power from small communities. It's really just a crazy situation. And they're also, I believe, looking at a power plant on Cayuga Lake as another Bitcoin mining operation. So this is about to blow up, no pun intended. Given the fracked gas that they're using, this problem is going to get much, much worse very quickly. And the amount of air pollution is also astounding as they quadruple operations. So right now they're at, I think, 19 megawatts at Greenwich, and they effectively want to quadruple that for Bitcoin mining. So you can, probably one of the best sources of information is Seneca Lake Guardian. There are quite a few news stories out there, and I was just talking to a reporter from Ithaca. He's got a week-long series that's going to be coming out, that's going to feature Bitcoin in depth. And some of the impacts around the Finger Lakes. So we'll let you know when that airs and how to find it. There's going to be a lot more coming out. And I think stopping this expansion on Seneca Lake at Greenwich is got more potential because of all these other expansions that New York State is facing in Bitcoin at these other power plants. And there's something like 30 power plants that could potentially be repurposed for Bitcoin mining. And I guarantee there are people trying to figure out how to do it because Greenwich is making a ton of money. So it's smart. What they're doing is smart. It's not good for Seneca Lake. It's devastating for our environment. It is against all climate goals that the New York State and the United States has set. But in terms of money making, since they don't have to pay for the pollution, you know, if they did, then things would be different. They wouldn't be as likely to do this. But the way we have set up our economy, companies don't pay for the pollution. Generally, I mean, there's been some that have, you know, paid for remediation of pollution in lakes and rivers and, you know, things like mercury. But you know, in general, companies and people do not pay for pollution. Well, we do. We just, it's not paid in a direct sense for the companies that are producing it, the people that are using power. You know, it's, but it is a cost, and we just don't acknowledge that. And that's one of the reasons that operations like Greenwich can get so out of control, because there's no impact to them of producing more pollution. It's, it goes up the smokestack and off over the region, and it's no longer their problem. And that's a big issue for our region. So again, I neglected to say this yesterday. I meant to say this at the rally, that it's Joseph Campbell, Yvonne Taylor, the founders of Seneca Lake Guardian, who have their expertise and their interest in the region. Their and their volunteers, they have really made a massive difference in the region in terms of, you know, environmental responsibility and containing some of these massive industrial operations. And without them, we would be the gas storage and transportation hub of the Northeast in Watkins Glen. We would probably have a trash incinerator, one of the largest in the United States, in Romulus. But because of their work, we have protected Seneca Lake, and because of their work, we have a chance to limit this expansion at Greenwich. And we are not talking very many jobs. It's really, it's all risk and really no benefit for this expansion. So Seneca Lake Guardian, look them up online and consider getting involved to protect our region, to protect our state. This past week, the Billsboro Winery had the last of their virtual tastings for a little while. They may do them again later this summer, but they were tasting Cabernet Franc, which is probably the signature red grape for the Finger Lakes. There are certainly many other red vinifera grapes that are grown here and made into wine, but Cabernet Franc really is the most common and I think maybe even by far. Pinot Noir is more tender, has more disease pressure. So there is some Pinot Noir, but I think wineries are focusing more and more on Cabernet Franc, and it's delicious, great food wine. It's not as high in alcohol, not as jammy as some of the reds from warmer climates. It's more European in style, and it is widely available. Lots of wineries make Cabernet Franc. You should go in search of them and do some tastings. You know, bring a bottles from a few different wineries home and try them side by side. I've really loved the Cabernet Franc that Oneida Eagle Crest Vineyards does on Hemlock Lake. That is it's kind of been our family red table wine this winter during the this pandemic, and really fantastic and great value at Eagle Crest. And Billsboro's is delicious. Fox Runs had probably half a dozen Cabernet Francs over the last couple of months, and really, really fantastic. If you go to Arrowhead Spring Vineyards in Western New York, they have excellent reds that are slightly riper than the Finger Lakes, a little bit warmer climate there, and those are really delicious. So really all around us, some awesome wines being made. And this past week was the Finger Lakes Craft Beverage Conference, which was done online. Virtual Zoom conference, brought in a lot of panelists. They did a tremendous job with us. Cornell Cooperative Extension was, it was Tompkins or Seneca County or maybe Yates County, that worked on this, Judy Wright. Really a fantastic group of speakers and panelists talking about all aspects of craft beverages in general and different categories of those. And you have to, I went away from, one of my big takeaways, I guess, from this was just how much potential we have for growth. This is just the beginning right now of New York State and the Finger Lakes in particular being a wine and craft beverage destination. And there are some really great people working behind the scenes. In some cases, some of the trade associations and just the it's the excitement, the quality of people, the innovativeness. It's going to be a very exciting next 5 to 10 years as we come out of this pandemic. The wineries have invested a lot. Breweries are expanding and new ones are coming in. I was driving down to the rally yesterday down in Dresden against Greenwich's expansion and drove by Big Alice, which is a brewery that just purchased Gale Brewery. So Route 14 South, barely, I don't know, maybe it's a mile, maybe two at most, south of Geneva on Route 14. And they were just putting up the new sign for Big Alice, which is another cult brewery that is opening in the region. Other half in Bloomfield is the other one that opened a little while ago. These are wineries, or these are breweries that are putting us on the map, literally for beer. Like 2019, I think vinepair.com had Rochester listed as one of the top 10 beer destinations in the world, which I'm not a beer aficionado, so I didn't realize, there was that much excitement. I mean, this wasn't written by someone from Rochester, but in the article they mentioned Other Half Brewing, so it wasn't all about breweries in Rochester, which there are a lot now. We were up to over 25, I think, in Monroe County, Genesee Brewery doing some very innovative things, and as they are prospering. But it was Other Half Brewing that I think was one of the key reasons that we were on that list of the top 10 best destinations for beer in the world, which is, I'm still amazed by that. So exciting times for craft beverages. They'll have another conference in a year and hopefully in person, and things will have grown even more in the next year as operations continue to expand and new ones open. There are some new breweries about to open, and Will Cleveland from the Democrat and Chronicle was one of the panelists in this conference last week, and you can follow his writing through the Democrat and Chronicle. He covers a number of different beats, but beer is one of his favorite ones, and you can kind of see what's new following his column in the Democrat and Chronicle. You do have to be a subscriber, and it's like $10 a month to be a subscriber, so seems like a good deal to me. and I'm a longtime subscriber. Oh, if you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. We will be back next week with gardening, food, and the Finger Lakes here. And enjoy this beautiful weather. Finally, the rain has stopped. And if you've planted some things this past week that might be kind of tender with a frost, maybe a freeze coming Wednesday night, put something over them for the night, maybe a tarp or a piece of plastic or an old sheet. And protect those plants, the ones you've just put in. The bulbs don't need protection. It's just things that you've put in the last couple weeks, maybe, that might not have been hardened off. Have a great day. Michael Warren Thomas here at SaverLife.com.